Hello and welcome to the Barton Legal Podcast. I'm Bill Barton, a solicitor who lives and breathes construction and engineering law. At Barton Legal, we help clients in the UK and around the world on everything from litigation and arbitration to drafting and negotiating contracts. And in this podcast, we unpack the latest legal trends and problems facing the industry, providing you with straight-talking insights to help break down these complex legal questions. So, let's get on with today's episode. Hi everybody, I'm Bill Barton from Barton Legal, and this is a Legal Bite Size as part of the Barton Legal podcast series. Today, Legal Bite Size is going to talk about extensions of time under JCT contracts. So, all construction contracts have three elements: dealing with the time for completion, extensions of time, and the consequences for failing to complete the project on time, often in the form of liquidated and ascertained damages, referred to as LADs. In more complex building works, where multiple contractors and subcontractors are responsible for different aspects of work, it will be essential to agree a programme setting out when different works will take place and establish a timeline for completion for each. Without a programme, it's really difficult to manage a project effectively and prevent delays, and it can also help to ascertain where the fault for the delay lies. And that's important for the calculation of LADs, also the entitlement to an extension of time, and whether in fact completion has or has not been achieved. So, first of all, let's think about time for completion. The vast majority of building contracts will contain a date for completion, expressed as a specific date or as a matter of weeks from the date works commenced on site. You might have slight variations of that, particularly if there are, say, sectional completions. There's usually one or more contentious aspects of negotiations, as the consequences for missing the date for completion can be catastrophic for the contractor, rendering a project unprofitable for an employer. So that's why the time for completion is always something that should, in theory, be discussed, decided, and a date agreed that is to the full understanding of both parties. That doesn't always happen, and under another bite size, we'll look perhaps at why. Then dealing with extensions of time. An extension of time, otherwise referred to as EOT, is a formal mechanism in a contract that allows for the movement of the completion date, so that when delays occur that are not the fault of the contractor, they can apply for an extension of time, and therefore the date for completion moves, and on that basis, the contractor will not be held liable for that delay. However, there are instances where extension of time isn't applicable, so the contractor doesn't have any entitlement. The completion date may move, and that's when liquidated and ascertained damages may be applied and would have to be paid for by the contractor, usually by way of deduction from interim applications. So, if we go back, where the completion date is moved, so an example of this is variations, where the employer will change an aspect of the work to be carried out whilst the project is ongoing, and that requires the contractor to, say for example, order new materials or amend the design to accommodate that change. Modern construction contracts have extensive EOT provisions which cover most circumstances, but if there is an event not provided for in the contract, time might become at large. This means that the original completion date is no longer enforceable in a claim for LADs against the contractor, and therefore extension of time provisions are always, I think, regarded more as a protection for the employer as to really an entitlement to a contractor. But it's very important to note that time at large doesn't mean that a contractor is free from its obligations to complete the works in a timely manner. This stems from the prevention principle, whereby a party to a contract may not enforce non-compliance with the contract when they themselves are the ones preventing the other party from performance. Where a contract provides for it, there will typically be two types of delay for which a contractor can claim an extension of time. Firstly, an employer delay, as previously detailed, and secondly, a neutral delay, for instance, where poor weather conditions can make the site unsuitable or unsafe to work on. So, neutral delays, such as those caused by strikes, force majeure, supply chain, may be ones for which the contractor, under the terms of the contract, will not be held to be at fault, but they may be at the contractor's risk and may still not entitle them to an extension of time. And so it's all down to the drafting and negotiation of those terms. A force majeure event is not within a party's reasonable control, and those are usually natural disasters. Obviously, over recent years, we had COVID. So only when there are express provisions in a contract for extension of time in each circumstance will the contractor be entitled to an extension. So just looking at the ones we used above, for example, strikes. It's usual that if it's a national strike, so not something within the contractor's control, they get an extension of time. However, if the strike is specific to their workforce, they're probably not entitled to an extension of time. If you look at supply chain, that can be the same thing. So when we had Brexit, there was a difference between supply chain issues for which contractors were in control and supply chain where perhaps materials were coming from abroad, where nobody knew at that time the impact. And therefore, there was a different negotiation in terms of the disruption and risk. And then again, force majeure, as I say, these are usually outside of either party's control or knowledge or their foreseeability. So one of the issues you have perhaps with force majeure is if you look at, say, catastrophic weather events, those are generally they're outside of your control and you can't foresee them. And so you can understand why a contractor would get an entitlement to an extension, but that will usually be only for time and they won't get any money. The argument and issues can arise where, say, for example, COVID had been around for a while and parties began to understand what the risk to their particular project was and the risk of COVID and disruption. And so it was no longer outside of a party's control or their foreseeability that the project might be disrupted by COVID. So in any of these terms, you need to think about how your knowledge and the knowledge of the other party evolves and your ability to control it and plan for it. So that is why extension of time clauses are very dynamic. And I would always advise people against just having standard wording. You really do need to sit down and have, to a degree, an argument between the parties to really establish what are the risks that each party is thinking about and wants to take into account. There are, of course, differences between different forms of contract. And so, for example, in JCT, that provides for a detailed and comprehensive EOT mechanism at clause 2.24 of the 2016 design and build form, and clause 2.19 of the standard building contract. There is a list of relevant events in those clauses which detail the circumstances which will give rise to an entitlement to delay and therefore extension of time. The contract has an obligation to notify the architect or contract administrator who will assess that application and the delay and award an appropriate extension of time. That might be for all or none of the time applied for. Now, the contractor should notify the professional, so as I say, the architect or contract administrator, of that delay as soon as it becomes reasonably apparent. So that means that delay is something that has occurred. So the notification under JCT is after the event. So contrast that with NEC contracts and a different approach where they prefer reference to compensation events rather than extension time, although that they are broadly similar. So there are listed in the contract similar to JCT, but there's far greater emphasis under NEC on cooperation and early warning between the parties. The contractor generally must notify the contract professional within a set time frame, usually 8 weeks, or they risk losing their entitlement. But because it's the early warning nature of NEC, there's a greater forward-looking emphasis and obligation on the contractor to anticipate delay and disruption rather than waiting for it to happen. But the notice provisions, you know, are stringent. So in conclusion, I think it's of vital importance that building contracts comprehensively cover delay events and that a robust program is not only provided and followed, but it needs to be regularly updated and it needs to be properly understood by the parties. The spirit of the JCT contract is unambiguous and focuses on each party knowing exactly what their role is and enforcing strict adherence to it. I think that is contrasted to a degree by NEC, where there's a much greater focus on cooperation and a degree of collaboration. But the consequences for a contractor where a delay has not been expressly mentioned in the contract can be oppressive. So, careful drafting, careful discussion and deliberation between the parties can avoid that. Likewise, it's in neither party's interest for time to become at large, which may deprive either party or both of the commercial gain that they seek to obtain through the course of the contract. Overall, I would say that when you're looking at extensions of time under any form of contract, you need to be sure that the wording of the relevant clauses links with the other parts of the contract, that where you need, you use clear and easily read and written definitions of any terms, and that those are discussed between the parties, because it shouldn't be surprising that what one word or phrase means to one party may not mean the same to the other. So you must be on the same page. Anyway, I hope that little trip through extensions of time has been useful, perhaps interesting. And thank you very much to listening to another Legal Bite Size. Thanks very much. Take care. Bye.
Thank you for joining me for today's Barton Legal podcast. Please make sure you follow the show in your podcast app to get new episodes as soon as they're released. We'll be tackling another important topic in this month's Barton Legal webinar, and you can register for free and watch back our previous webinars at bartonlegal.com. Why don't you connect with me on LinkedIn and follow Barton Legal to keep up to date with all the legal trends and news? I look forward to speaking to you again in the next Barton Legal podcast.